illegally. Ron Vitello is the acting deputy commissioner of the U.S. Border Patrol and Customs. He explains the process.
So what happens is when people cross the border illegally, that's a federal crime. And working with Secretary Nielsen, the Department of Justice, the Attorney General, he's offered to prosecute anybody that crosses the border illegally. That's what's happening. So all of these cases are being referred, and if it happens to be a family, then they'll be separated.
Vitello talks about the changes made last month.
What's happened now is that the Attorney General, Secretary Nielsen, has said, hey, you will refer all people who cross the border illegally. We're not going to exempt anybody, any class of illegal alien that crosses the border illegally. It's a federal crime.
Today, Harvey Weinstein pleaded not guilty to rape and criminal sex acts charges in New York City. Weinstein and his attorney said they're going to fight the case and try to beat it before it even goes to trial. And finally, fashion designer Kate Spade was found dead in her apartment today in an apparent suicide. You're listening to USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290, 800-965-1290.
Former President Bill Clinton said he personally has not apologized to Monica Lewinsky. Yesterday, in an interview with NBC News, Clinton got a little bit heated with the interviewer. Last night, the president reflected on that interview.
The truth is, the hubbub was I got hot under the collar because of the way the questions were asked. The suggestion was that I'd never apologized. I did. I meant it then and I meant it now. I apologize to my family.
Folks on Capitol Hill are also responding and reacting to this interview. Kentucky Senator Rand Paul says same old from Bill Clinton.
It sounded like Bill Clinton took a poll from one interview to the next. They poll tested a response and he decided, you know what, I better apologize more because they'll come after me next. But Bill Clinton epitomizes, you know, sort of the aggressor, not the victim. He thinks he's still somehow a victim. In no world was it ever appropriate for the President of the United States to be having sex under his desk with a 20-year-old. There's no way can that even be consented to. So if he doesn't understand that, and see the mainstream media for decades were complicit with Bill Clinton. Oh, well, it was consensual. Well, to tell you the truth, you can't really have an appropriate consensual relationship with a 20-year-old intern in your office. That is the definition of sexual harassment. It's the definition of using the power of your office to get something you want.
And it was back on this date in 2004 when former President Ronald Reagan passed away. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com. at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good Morning Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
Thank you. Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Hoo-ah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America and our 11th anniversary. United American Patriots support our brave American troops who, for wildly inappropriate reasons, have been jailed for murder by our military because they shot the enemy in combat. That sounds crazy, but it's true. If you find this beyond belief as I did, check their website, unitedpatriots.org. Here's what we have for you this hour. Sam Rose is a vet helping other hurting vets. Jeff Dove is a combat veteran who's decided to run for Congress, and we do need more combat veterans in Congress. And Michael Williams is a combat vet who was convicted for murder for killing the enemy in combat. We really need to get him a presidential pardon. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our Armed America Report. Troops, I welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. Now it's time to meet Samantha Rose. Sam was the head of the veteran students group at her college and now has a dream job helping hurting vets. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom, Sam.
Thank you very much, Danny.
Sam, tell us your story. How and why did you join the military, the Army? What'd you do?
So it was kind of an interesting way of getting into the military. It was something I had never considered. I did not have a very strong family history of service in the military. My grandfather served during Korea, never went to war. I had a few uncles randomly that were in for just a little bit of time. No big military history in my family. But I graduated high school in 2002 and enrolled in Grand Rapids Community College. And promptly dropped out of Grand Rapids Community College about three semesters in a row. And at that same time that I was realizing that I hated school, I had a friend who joined the Army as an MP. And sitting and talking with him, I asked him randomly, I said, hey, do they have veterinarians in the Army? He's like, well, I don't know. Let's go talk to the recruiter. And 6 days later, I was in Lansing signing my name on the dotted line.
So you were in the active Army, not the Guard or Reserve?
That is correct. I was active duty.
And you were a veterinarian, a veterinary assistant. What do they call that?
Yes, I was in the veterinary corps.
You know, a lot of people don't know that we have one in the Army, and they service all of the branches, and we really need them. And it's not to take care of dogs and cats, is it?
We do that, and we also do food inspection because, like that old saying, an Army marches on a stomach.
It sure does. And the veterinarians that I have known in the military spent a substantial portion of their time making sure that our food was good to eat. And yes, they took care of dogs and cats too, but that was not their primary. Though almost everybody thinks that's all they do. I take it you had fun and that you like dogs and cats or you wouldn't have done that?
That is correct. That was always my plan until I realized how much I hated school, that I wanted to be a veterinarian. My mom worked as a veterinary technician when I was very young, and so that always inspired me to want to become a veterinarian. And since I hated school so much, I figured the best way to go about doing that was to serve in the Army.
Well, I'm fond of saying, and I have taught at Grand Rapids Community College for years, that education is absolutely critical, and occasionally it happens in classrooms.
That's
so,
right.
So your education, at least initially, happened somewhere else.
Yes.
In the Army. What kind of things did you do? Did you do primarily critters? Did you primarily food or a mixture or what?
So I was fortunate. They have two different MOSs, military occupation specialties, that fall under the umbrella of the veterinary corps, which is specifically food inspection or specifically the veterinary technician. The job opening for veterinary technician was about a year and a half out when I enlisted. I was like, well, I want to kind of go in sooner than that. So I ended up signing up for the food inspection side of it. But once I got to my unit, I was stationed in Stuttgart, Germany, with my headquarters in Kaiserslautern, Germany. I expressed my desire to be cross-trained on the job as a veterinary technician. So I got to dabble in both.
You know, it's a rare organization that doesn't like people who want to be cross-trained. This is a desirable thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a win-win situation. So how many years did you serve?
I was in for just under 3 years. I served my entire time in Stuttgart, Germany. My unit did deploy to Kuwait, Qatar, and Djibouti, and I got injured just prior to deployment, so I stayed behind on the rear detachment.
Okay. And then at the end of your time, you got out to do what?
So I always tell people I did life a little bit backwards because I joined the military. Then I got pregnant, then I got married, and then I went to school. So
okay.
It was interesting. I did attempt to go into veterinary technician school about 4 or 5 months after my separation from the Army. And I was about a month into classes when I received a letter from my college saying, you don't have the GI Bill and you owe us your first semester's tuition.
Ooh.
Yes. So that was interesting. And it took me 5 years of trying to chase down what went wrong and who can fix this before somebody said, why don't you use voc rehab? the VA Vocational Rehabilitation Program to go to college. And then it was another 3 years after starting that program that somebody finally went back retroactively and fixed my clerical error for my GI Bill.
So if somebody wanted to write a humorous story about things that could go wrong in the military, you could have a couple of chapters.
Just a couple, yes.
This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom, and we're discussing Sam helping other veterans as we talk about some of the funny things that happened to her there. Okay, so ultimately, you got a bachelor's degree and a master's degree. How'd that happen?
So, like I had stated, I had originally planned on going to veterinary technician school. Due to a screw-up with my paperwork, I had to drop out of that and fight for years to be able to go to school. And during the time that I was fighting so hard to get my education benefits that I earned through my service, it made me passionate about fighting for other veterans so that they could have access to their benefits as well. So I ended up speaking with a couple of people that initially got me started on the VA Voc Rehab track. They were both social workers. And I said, I want to do exactly what you do. I want to be in a position that I can help other veterans the way that you guys are helping me now. So what do I need to do? They said, get a master's in social work. I said, all right, cool. That's what I'm going to do.
That time you were motivated.
Then I was extremely motivated.
It's amazing how easy school is when you're learning something you want to learn.
Very true.
And how hard it is when you're not.
Yes. Yep. I ended up graduating with two associate's degrees, a bachelor's degree and a master's degree. The two associates, I did summa cum laude, 4.0, grade point average. The bachelor's, some other Latin words, and a 3.9 GPA, and my master's with a 3.77.
I've always disliked people with your grade point average. I graduated at the very top of the bottom third of my class at West Point, but God loves you people too. But at least you earned it. You ground your way up. And it is true. It's very, very different when you're studying stuff you love.
Very true.
And stuff that you want to learn. Well, having graduated, you ran into the Johnson Brower Foundation. How'd that happen and what are you doing for them?
So throughout my time at Grand Valley State University, I was serving with the Student Veterans of America Grand Valley State University chapter. So we supported about 500 student veterans who were in attendance at our school. I was the vice president and then the president my final year at school. And I became connected with a plethora of other veteran service organizations in and around the West Michigan area. That's actually how I met you, Denny.
Yes,
that was
is.
Fun. So because I had all of these connections in our community that help serve veterans, I was recently working on a veterans benefits fair that I helped host at an American Legion post here in town. And I was keeping track of the master sheet of who all was going to be in attendance at this. And I was told to add the Johnson Brower Foundation to this list. I said, oh, I've never heard of them before. So I did a quick Google search and realized that they were a new nonprofit organization that would be providing counseling and therapy to veterans and their family members. And of course, this is right up my alley. So I sent an email to the director of the foundation, Jesse Johnson Brower, and said, hey, I don't know if you guys are hiring, but this is who I am and this is what I do. And I'd love to come and talk with you. Went into the office the week after I graduated and they said, we want you. So, yeah.
And about a month and a half ago, Jesse was a guest on this show. So this is sort of like all in the family.
Yes.
So we've only got a little bit of time left. If people are interested in either learning more about the Johnson Brower Foundation, getting help from them, or maybe contributing, how do they do that?
You can go to their website. It is johnsonbrowerfoundation.com. It will give you synopsis of everything that we've got going on that we're doing to assist military veterans and their family members with the different types of therapies and programs that we're hosting, as well as there will be events posted on there. We've got some fundraisers coming up. And if you should feel moved to donate, there is also a donate button.
And this is a national organization. They don't just operate here in West Michigan. Well, thank you, Sam. Thanks for taking time to join us today. And thank you for your service to our nation. I appreciate you. I'm glad we're friends.
Thank you, Denny.
This is Colonel Denny Gilliam. Next up, we'll meet Jeff Dove. We'll hear about how hard his life was as he got started and his decision to never give up. Then we're going to talk with an Army sergeant who was convicted by our Army for murder for killing the enemy in combat. You have reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Troops hit the deck right now and rest. The starting position for the push-up is called the front-leaning rest. Get into the front-leaning rest position, think positive, patriotic thoughts, and stay there till I return. I want you to lean in mean.
Spartan Ash holds a special place in its heart for Honor and Remember, and we're proud to sponsor Run for the Fallen as another way to honor those who paid the ultimate sacrifice and service to our country. Run for the Fallen is a 6,000-mile run taking place from April 7th to August 5th.
Each day, a team of runners will set out, stopping 1 mile at a time to read the name of a fallen soldier out loud.
To join the Run for the Fallen as a volunteer or to show your support, visit runforthefallen.org.
This is Marine Vet Skip Correa with your Home Defense Tip of the Week. Sit down with your children and make a plan for home defense. Let them know that if shooting starts, they should drop to the ground for safety. If they hear breaking glass or see a home invader, they should notify you immediately if safely possible. If they can't get to you, they should hide until the danger is over. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
This report is brought to you by Sears. Memorial Day is the unofficial start of summer. It's a perfect time to get your home ready for the warmer months. To have peace of mind all summer long, homeowners want to avoid surprises during the hottest time of the year. They can follow these basic maintenance tips or bring in the experts for help. Chip Wade, celebrity home designer and expert craftsman.
Homeowners will definitely want their air conditioners working, so inspect and replace the air filter according to the owner's manual. Also, make sure to clean the inside of your washer. Warmer temperatures make these areas prone to mold growth and can even cause odors. Next, make sure you and your family stay properly hydrated and keep your refrigerator's water fresh by replacing the filter as needed. If larger issues with your appliances arise, Sears Home Services expert technicians can come to your home to perform a full 64-point inspection.
For more information, visit searshomeservices.com/summer.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in a critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thank you for joining us today on Front Lines of Freedom. It's a pleasure to welcome to Front Lines of Freedom, Jeff Dove. Jeff started life under less than ideal circumstances as the child of a single mom. He joined the Army and served in combat, and now he's running for Congress. That's quite a path. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jeff, tell us your story. starting life in a single-parent home clearly didn't hold you down, but it's a disadvantage that a lot of people have to overcome. Some of them do, some of them don't. How'd you do it?
So when I was growing up, my mother instilled in me this sense of needing to work hard for everything you get. So when I started out, my mother and I, we were on welfare. My mother worked multiple jobs, two or three at a time, to try to just make ends meet and support us. But she did that in order to get off of the government support, in a sense, because she knew that wasn't what she wanted to be and how she didn't want to live her life. And I saw this growing up, and that motivated me to work even harder to get where I am today.
Well, you know, it's amazing how important our role models are, and our parents are certainly role models, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And she's my biggest role model because I spent so much time with her and seeing her struggles and successes in life.
Well, what more would you want from your parents? To love you, of course, but also to role model for you just exactly that, because that's what's going to help you live the rest of your life successfully, right?
Exactly. Just watching her growing up motivated me to want to do good in school, motivated me to want to be successful in my career and my relationships, my personal relationships. If it wasn't for her, I don't know how my marriage would be successful, in a sense. Just being able to see things like that with regards to my mother's life and growing up.
Well, obviously she did a good job because you have gone away. So talk about the Army. Why did you join? When did you join? What'd you do?
In 2004, I was actually attending the Art Institute of Washington for computer animation. That was my initial passion. My dream job was to work for Disney or something at some point. I've always had this interest in IT, so that's where that kind of started. I actually was paying quite a bit for school when it got overwhelming, in a sense. And I had thought about joining the military after high school, actually. One of my best friends, who is serving in the Marines now, he's first sergeant level in the Marines, he basically came to me and said, hey, we should join the Marines. And I said, no, this is not the right time for me. And so in 2004, I made the decision, you know what, this is the right time. And so I joined the Army. I was a chemical operations specialist. My basic training was at Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. I went through the chemical defense training facility there. After that, I was stationed in Fort Carson, Colorado, did one tour in Iraq between October 2005 and November 06. While I was there, went on over 230 or so combat patrol missions as the lead gunner for providing security for our battalion sergeant major and battalion commander. After that, I left the military in 2007, and I've been working in IT ever since, actually.
Okay, that makes sense. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom, and we're discussing running for Congress. Well, actually, we're about to start discussing running for Congress with Army vet Jeff Dove. Jeff, all what you said makes sense, but it takes a special kind of, I don't know, disease maybe, it takes a special kind of motivation to get somebody to get interested enough in our government to pay attention to it, and then to want to get involved, and then to want to run for office. What got you interested in government in general and paying attention to that?
I would say I've always paid attention since my youth to government. My first president was Reagan, so that kind of helped me get on the right path, in a sense. I've always had this itch for public service. It's why I joined the military, and I've always wanted to help people. And when I went into the ballot box in 2016, on one side of the ballot, I saw the presidential election, President Trump. And on the other side, I saw one man's name, and it was my current opponent. And he ran unopposed in a congressional seat. And I said, how in the world did this happen? This should never happen in America. I don't care what party it is. There should always be multiple voices for the people to choose between. And so I actually started on my quest in December 2016, spoke to my family, you know, talked about it, reached out to party leadership to find out what exactly happened in 2016 and announced in February 2017. So I've been doing this for well over a year now. First, I was very green. So I was,
yeah.
but now you can say I'm kind of a KG veteran. I've been around the block for a while now. But going from having no political experience to this world is a very, it's a culture shock in a sense.
Oh, yeah, it is. I went much more gradually. When I got out of the Army, I got active in politics, helping other people run. I did that sort of thing. Then I took leadership in campaigns, did that at all kinds of levels. And finally, as a last resort, I became a candidate. So you sort of jumped in the deep end initially. I took the easy way. But nonetheless, the solution is that our country needs good, qualified people.
Exactly.
And we need to hold them accountable. We need to care about it.
So I'll say one of the things that I had to get used to the most when I first started out was I announced in February that year, and in March last year I had my first little meet and greet event, just kind of to kick off my candidacy. And he sent a tracker to this event, and I had to get used to having someone following me around everywhere I went to try and catch me slipping up so that they could try and use it against me in the future. That was probably the biggest change I had to make, in a sense, be mindful of my surroundings at all times, even more so, which the military prepared me for, right?
But it's hard to believe that there are people that really do that, follow people around to try to catch them short, as opposed to trying to make the best out of a situation and achieve what's best for the country. But there are people like that.
Exactly. So with regards to trying to get the best people into office, I found that it seems like a lot of the politicians fall in two categories, lawyer, business executive. Those two groups aren't the only groups of people that have great ideas to move us forward.
And as a matter of fact, what we need more than anything else is combat veterans, people who will be very careful about sending our troops into combat and will make sure they're taken care of if they are in combat.
Exactly.
So, Jeff, we're running out of time. Talk to us about how people can learn more about you, get involved, support you, help you, whatever. How can people get in touch with you?
So you can find my website. It's www.dove4congress.com. You can also go to my Facebook page, Jeff Dove for Congress, or my Twitter, which is at Jeffrey A. Dove Jr. I'm actually connected to the internet all the time because I'm an IT guy. So you can reach out to me through any of those avenues. I pretty much respond right away. Your support, any volunteers that might live in my area, that would be great. And your prayers, first and foremost, is what I need.
Okay, first of all, where do you live?
I live in Woodbridge, Virginia, actually.
Okay. So if you're in the Virginia area, here's somebody you can help. And one more time, doveforcongress.org?
Doveforcongress.com.
Doveforcongress.com. Jeff, thank you for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your service to our nation. Thank you for wanting to continue to serve. God bless you, brother. Let's stay in touch.
Thank you so much for having me. God bless.
Coming up next, we'll meet Michael Williams, a former Army sergeant who was convicted of murder for killing the enemy in combat. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. I'm Colonel Danny Gillen. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Start with a dozen, then stand at ease, but stay in the area. Imagine being a U.S. combat soldier or Marine facing the enemy, doing your job fighting the enemy, and then being falsely accused of committing a war crime by our government. This sounds crazy, but during the last 10 years, this has happened too many times. United American Patriots support these wrongfully jailed American heroes by providing civilian attorneys at no cost to the accused or his family. Check unitedpatriots.org.
Ready for a great day on the boat?
Oh, yeah. Hand me that cooler, will you?
Okay. That everything?
Food, sunscreen, tackle, bait, life jackets?
Nah, we won't need them.
Yeah, but I kind of promised my wife.
No, life jacket. That's a deal breaker, Robert.
Yeah, and I promised my daughter.
Come on, Daddy.
Hand me one of those life jackets, will you?
Yeah.
This message brought to you by the National Safe Boating Council and the women who nag you. love you.
USA Radio News.
Today, a federal judge ordered former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort to respond to prosecutors' claims that he sought to tamper with the testimony of two witnesses. Manafort's attorneys have until Friday to respond to the claim. Yesterday, the Supreme Court ruled that a Colorado baker who wouldn't make a wedding cake for a same-sex couple was discriminated against due to his religious beliefs by the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. Jack Phillips is a baker in Colorado, and he explains how he tried to work with the two men when they came into his store for the first time.
One of them said, "We're here to look at wedding cakes." The other one said, "It's for our wedding." At that point, I knew that it was a wedding cake that I couldn't create in good conscience. I tried to apologize to the young men. You know, "I'm sorry. I'll sell you anything else in the shop. Cookies, brownies, birthday cakes. I'll make custom work for you. This is just a cake that I can't create because it creates a special message that goes against the core of my faith."
You're listening to USA Radio News.
I'm Captain Obvious, and Hotels.com rewards me basically everywhere I stay. So why am I currently skipping stones with four locals and one grizzly bear outside this Riverside Lodge in Portland? Because Hotels.com lets me do me. And because, honestly, the bear just kind of joined in, and now we're afraid that if we stop, he'll get angry. He can smell our fear. Hotels.com. You do you and get rewarded.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Welcome back to Front Lines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. A Front Lines of Freedom salute to one of our show's great sponsors, Honor and Remember, and their national sponsor, Spartan Nash. If you know someone who died while serving our nation in uniform, contact Honor and Remember so they can be honored. HonorandRemember.org. It's a pleasure to welcome to Front Lines of Freedom a fellow former Army Ranger, Michael Williams. Michael was an Army sergeant in combat doing his job when the Army decided that he needed to be charged for murder. Unfortunately, he's not the only soldier to have this happen to him. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom, Michael.
Thank you very much for having me, Danny.
Michael, let's start at the beginning. When and why did you join Mother Army?
I joined like most young men at 19 years old. I was looking for a sense of adventure. I was in school and things weren't going very well. So I talked to a recruiter and he told me a great story and I signed on the dotted line.
Tell us about your assignments and deployments. You ended up as a ranger, so you obviously didn't take the soft, easy way out. What'd you do?
So I came into the Army and volunteered for the infantry, volunteered for the airborne, and then became a ranger. And to clarify for your listeners, yes, that's a 75th Ranger Regiment. So that was my first assignment for the first 3 years of my career from 97 to 2000. And then I got out, went to school, and then came back in after 9/11.
A lot of people have done that too, didn't you? Saw other people doing that too, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Came back in after 9/11 to do what? To what kind of unit? Talk about deployments.
So after 9/11, as you know, that was the day that kind of woke people up, you know, when the planes hit the buildings. It changed a lot of thinking for a lot of people. I think if you asked any American that lived through that day, they'd be able to tell you exactly where they were, what they were doing. And if they were honest about it, they'd tell you they were pretty scared. So I think we kind of thought we were invincible, and we found out we weren't. So I guess when the terrorists attack, when the Muslim extremists attack, I don't mind saying that, and they just want to kill Americans, their favorite targets seem to be women and children and the elderly. They want to attack our families, our soft targets, things like that. This kind of sickens and infuriates me. So I joined back up and went back in and joined infantry. And this time I joined in mechanized infantry unit and went to Fort Riley, Kansas. So I was in, and my first deployment was in Iraq in 2003.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. We're discussing how our Army destroyed the life of a great soldier with Michael Williams. Okay, Michael, so then you had another tour, and that's when the stuff hit the fan. Mm-hmm. Talk about that.
So, second deployment. I go back in the summer of 2004. Second deployment is nothing like the first deployment. Second deployment, I couldn't tell you where it went south. Somewhere in between my first deployment and second deployment, things got a little bit different. I don't know what happened, where it happened. Couldn't tell you. As I go back from my second deployment, things are totally different. The conventional stand-up fight is gone. It's an unconventional guerrilla warfare that we're fighting. Our forces are very ill-equipped to fight it. So we are outmatched. The enemy's taken off their uniforms. Instead of flowers, hugs, kisses, it is IEDs, mines, ambushes. So it is a fight that we just can't fight, you know? So it's frustrating. It's scary. It's policies that, you know, we can't fight. It's hard. It's scary. So the first deployment, we could outmaneuver, outgun them, outman them. Second deployment, it's a total nightmare. As they say, it's a quagmire. It's a different time.
Okay, get to the bad day, Michael. I need you to get to that day when the Army became your enemy.
Okay. During the second deployment, one of the things that they changed was the ROE. As you know, the ROE stands for Rules of Engagement. Something I learned during my second deployment is that it was very fluid. The ROE seemed to change on a weekly basis, if not a daily basis. And the reason I know this is because I was the NCO that would sit in on the company-level meetings and then brief the other platoons. So I would get the ROE. If it changed, I would brief the other platoons. Sometimes, you know, they'd have to show hostile intent. You could fire back. Sometimes you couldn't fire back. And if you want to believe it or not, there was a point in time in Iraq where every Iraqi household could own an AK-47 for self-protection. So I want you to imagine going through on patrols and cordon and searches looking for weapons, and everybody owns an AK. The enemy doesn't wear uniforms. It is a nightmare. And August in 2004 rolls around. We're kind of lucky. We haven't lost anybody yet. My platoon is lucky. I'm seeing the ROE change frequently. I'm starting to see this catch and release policy that's going on and take hold. So that means we would catch a guy and then we'd have to release him. So the enemy is not stupid. I don't know about us, but the enemy is not stupid. They've taken off their uniforms. They've realized they can use the ROE against us. They can use our laws of war against us. They'll shoot at us and then they'll throw down our weapons and they know we have to let them go. So I get to the point where I know my responsibility is to my men to bring them home safe and to come home safe to my family. Plus, this is what I'm trained to do. So if someone's trying to kill me, if someone's trying to kill my man, then I'm only going to give them one chance.
Yes.
If they want to throw down their weapon, big mistake on their part. If they don't want to follow the rules, I'm not going to follow the rules. This is a war. I'm coming home to my family. I'm bringing my men home to their families.
Yes.
I'm not civil affairs. I'm the infantry. I go out to kill the enemy. I'm coming home.
Yes.
In the summer of 2004, I don't want to pretend to understand politics, but I do believe politics was a driving force behind what happened to me and not the fact that I was acting like a soldier. But in the September of 2004, I was charged with the murder of Iraqi nationals. The Army was going to court-martial me for doing exactly what they trained me to do, and that was kill the enemy. And they did. Some 14 years later, I don't know, you know, looking back, I don't know why they chose to do what they did. I don't know why that happened to me. I mean, I gave them everything I had. Everything I had. And I don't understand why it still wasn't enough. I believe wholeheartedly I didn't do anything wrong. I killed the enemy just like they trained me to do.
You killed the enemy
and
in
I would
combat.
Do it all over.
You didn't sneak into somebody's house while they were sleeping. You were in combat.
No,
right?
No. Absolutely.
And that's what
Absolutely.
We do. I'm an infantryman too. That's what we do.
Absolutely. It was always a combat situation. It was an op order. It was a plan. It was a raid, cordon and search. It was a planned mission.
And for doing that, you were court-martialed, found guilty of murder, sentenced to prison, mm-hmm. and served 10 years
in prison.
In Leavenworth?
Yes, I did.
And
10 years in prison. Mm-hmm.
And you were then released on parole.
Mm-hmm.
And you are out on parole now, or are you over parole?
No, I'm out on parole now. I've been out on parole since May of 2014.
Okay.
Yes.
And I understand that you are fortunate indeed because your family is there supporting you and the family business where you could get a job so that you can begin to have some sort of normalcy in your life. That's not true for most of your peers, is it?
No, that's not true. It's very hard to be a felon, which is what I'm actually classified as. You know, a felon is a second-class citizen. So it's hard to get a place to live. It's hard to get a job. You're looked down on. So it's very difficult for anybody that's in these kind of circumstances. And regardless, even if that somebody knows that I'm in for murder, it's split 50-50. There's such a great divide in our country between conservatives and liberals, the left and the right, some people look at me regardless of what my story is, and they're still going to see a murderer. They're still going to see a monster. So yeah, I deal with that all the time.
And I don't imagine you know, I killed any more people there than I did in Vietnam, but I'm not looked that way.
No, no.
But we did the same thing.
I think that movie, A Few Good Men, Jack Nicholson, they sleep under the very blanket of freedom that we provide. But yes, they want to mock us. So it's one of those things. They enjoy the freedoms that we provide them, but still they can look down us and thumb our noses at us.
The
so
right solution here
the judgment
is for President
is
Trump to grant you and all the others like you a full pardon, right?
That'd be outstanding.
That would restore you to being an accepted citizen, and you would no longer be a felon of any kind. That's what you
Absolutely.
And your fellow who have suffered as you have for doing their duty fully deserve. Folks, that's something you can do. You can communicate with the president or your Congress critters and tell them, let's get pardons for our soldiers who are doing the right thing. What's life like now, Michael?
Life is better. I'm free, man, which is a lot. I have a lot better view. When I went to prison, I was married, and my wife was pregnant. My marriage kind of fell apart, and I didn't get to see my daughter when I was in prison. I've tried to reestablish that connection. So things are looking up. Work is good. Things are improving, but it's still hard being a felon. So anything that would improve that, that would make it life a whole lot easier.
So, folks, there's something we can do to help Michael. He went over to serve our country as a combat infantryman and did, and this is what he got in return, and he's not the only one. Michael, thank you for taking time to join us today. Thank you for sharing that very painful part of what happened to you. I'm proud to call you friend. I hope we can stay in touch forever.
Thank you very much, Danny. I appreciate it.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag, then it's military history. You reported for duty to Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Get a bench of some good weights, then do 50 bench presses. I want you to lean and mean, then stand at ease.
Mike Hewitt here. Until we all embrace equality equally, there won't be any for anyone. If we are ever to put racism firmly in our rearview mirror, we must first acknowledge there's a certain percentage of racism within every ethnicity. And don't forget, classism is every bit as ugly as racism. Most reasonable minds will agree that any group of people spewing hate for others or seeking to be first in line or to place others behind or below them solely because of ethnicity or personal faith are not examples to be held up for our young, our next generations. This isn't a partisan issue. It's much more fundamental. Consider our choices between melting pot and identity politics. This is an easy choice. One asks us all to add to the greater culture, while the other seeks to alienate and divide. You decide, but be very careful. Our children and theirs depend on us. Get beyond the obvious at themikehewittshow.com.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in a critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Front Lines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me, Danny, at frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Hey, Skip, what's first?
Pete from New Jersey sends his congratulations on being on the air for 11 years. He's only been listening for just over 2 years.
Thanks much, Pete. I had no idea when we started that we'd be going this long. On the other hand, once we started, I found myself having too much fun. I can't imagine ending the show.
Sean liked the interview about the Flying Tigers. He thought he knew a lot about World War II, but found he only knows about that part of the war where American units fought.
That's a common problem, Sean. We are only taught or read about fights that our units were in. The Russian fighting against the Germans in World War II was huge and very bloody, and most of us have never even heard about it. I'm glad you liked the story of the Flying Tigers. They were brave men. Well, you know, gents, before we get to military history, the other day I was thinking about the best advice I ever got when I was on active duty. I was an Army advisor to the Michigan Army National Guard. We were at Camp Grayling, Michigan, on the National Guard maneuvers in mid-morning and had flown to a headquarters for a briefing that would probably include lunch. I told our chopper pilot, a warrant officer, that he was free till about 1 p.m. My guess was good, so about 12:45 I went back to find him. He was checking the aircraft like a good pilot would. I told him we'd be done at our meeting and ready to take off at 1. He thanked me. I came back at 1, and he was still tinkering with the airplane. I told him, "Hey, Chief, let's go." He looked at me and said, "Colonel, it is far better to be on the ground wishing you were in the air than," and he didn't finish the sentence. But I got the message. My guidance was, "Let me know when you and the aircraft are ready to go." He did, and we had a safe flight.
You know, Colonel, I think that's one of the marks of a great commissioned officer, and that's knowing when to let the troops do their job.
Knowing when to shut up isn't a bad trick.
Yes, it's also a mark of longevity.
Yes, because taking off in a plane that ain't ready to fly, you probably will get in the air. And you will get back to the ground.
Yes, you will. 100% of the time.
That's right. Okay, now it's time for military history. Lead out, Skip.
On 6 June 1918, the first large-scale battle fought by the American soldiers in World War I began in Belleau Wood. The previous month, the Germans penetrated the Western Front to within 45 miles of Paris. U.S. forces under General John Pershing helped halt the German advance, and on June 6, Pershing ordered a counteroffensive to drive the Germans out of Belleau Wood. U.S. Marines under General James Harbord led the attack against the four German divisions, and by the end of the first day, suffered over 1,000 casualties. For the next 3 weeks, the Marines, backed by U.S. Army artillery, launched attacks into the forested area, but German General Ludendorff was determined to deny the Americans a victory. Ludendorff continually brought up reinforcements from the rear, and the Germans attacked the U.S. forces with machine guns, artillery, and gas. Finally, on June 26, the Americans prevailed, but at the cost of nearly 10,000 dead, wounded, or missing in action.
That's extreme, to make a statement.
And that's why the Marines love Army artillery.
I understand that, too. On 4 June 1942, the Battle of Midway, one of the most decisive U.S. victories against Japan during World War II, began. During the four-day sea and air battle, the outnumbered U.S. Pacific Fleet succeeded in destroying four Japanese aircraft carriers while losing only one of its own, the Yorktown, to the previously invincible Japanese Navy. The U.S., however, was a growing threat, and Japanese Admiral Yamamoto sought to destroy the U.S. fleet. Yamamoto's plan consisted of a feint towards Alaska, followed by an invasion of Midway. When our fleet arrived at Midway to respond to the invasion, it would be destroyed by the superior Japanese fleet, waiting unseen. This would eliminate the Pacific Fleet and provide an outpost from which the Japanese could eliminate any future American threat in the Central Pacific. U.S. intelligence, however, broke the Japanese naval code, and we anticipated the surprise attack. And 200 miles to the northeast, two U.S. attack fleets caught the Japanese force entirely by surprise, badly damaging it. Japan's losses brought the Japanese and American sea power to approximate parity and marked the turning point in the Pacific War.
It was one heck of a battle, Colonel.
Glad I wasn't there.
Oh, yeah, you and me both. On 6 June 1944, now known as D-Day, another day I'm glad I wasn't there, Colonel,
General Dwight Eisenhower, then Supreme Commander of Allied Expeditionary Forces in World War II, gave the go-ahead for a massive invasion of Europe called Operation Overlord. Back in America, President Franklin Roosevelt waited for word of the invasion's success. 2 days later, Eisenhower was able to report that the Allies had made a harrowing and deadly but ultimately successful landing on the beaches of Normandy.
That was probably the turning point in the war in Europe.
Definitely.
Brave and bloody. Well, on 5 June 1967, the Six-Day War began. Israel responded to an ominous buildup of Arab forces along its borders by launching simultaneous attacks against Egypt and Syria. Jordan subsequently entered the fray, but the Arab coalition was no match for Israel's proficient armed forces, and in 6 days of fighting, Israel occupied the Gaza Strip and the Sinai Peninsula of Egypt, the Golan Heights of Syria, and the West Bank and Arab sector of East Jerusalem, both previously under Jordanian rule. The UN ceasefire took effect on June 11th. The true fruits of victory came in claiming the old city of Jerusalem from Jordan. Many wept while bent in prayer at the Western Wailing Wall. While no other Arab nation did, Egypt eventually negotiated and made peace with Israel. In 1982, the Sinai Peninsula was returned to Egypt in exchange for full diplomatic recognition of Israel. Egypt and Jordan later gave up their respective claims to the Gaza Strip and the West Bank to the Palestinians, who opened a land for peace talks with Israel beginning in the 1990s. A permanent Israeli-Palestinian peace agreement is unlikely, as the Arabs demand the end of Israel and of all Jews.
And then in 1973, they did the whole thing over again.
And with the same result.
Yes.
And that's military history for today. Skip, it's Armed America Report time. What do we have this week?
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, Houston police were investigating a case in which a woman used a gun to fend off three attackers who ambushed her in her driveway. The resident arrived home in the overnight hours. Three masked men jumped her as soon as she exited her car. The woman's mother, who was in the house, noticed the scuffle and called 911. The victim somehow got away from her assailants and took refuge inside the house. That wasn't enough to deter the troublemakers, who tried to force their way into the home after her. Once inside, the woman grabbed a gun that she kept in the home for defensive purposes. As the suspects pushed through the door, the woman fired, sending the men scurrying off.
Thanks, Colonel. There are two important lessons to be learned here about protecting yourself against violent crime. First, let's talk about the inherent dangers we face in transitional spaces. All of us cross transitional spaces every day. Examples would be parking lots, the driveway to our house, or even an ATM machine. I define transitional spaces as any area that must be crossed through in order to get from one relative area of safety to another area of safety. In this story, the Houston woman needed to get from her car to the inside of her home. And to complicate matters, it was dark outside, a time when criminals are more active and also when honest citizens are not always able to see danger coming. For all these reasons, it's paramount that we operate at a heightened state of awareness while in these transitional spaces. Colonel Jeff Cooper defined these using a color coding method. In condition white, you are relaxed and unaware of what is going on around you. In condition yellow, you remain relaxed but are aware of who and what is around you. In condition orange, you have identified something of interest that may or may not prove to be a threat. In condition red, you change the focus of your attention from a potential threat to a potential target. This may include drawing your gun depending on the situation. Second, let's discuss the importance of being armed and properly trained while out late at night. In a state like Texas, especially in a city the size of Houston, there is absolutely no rational excuse to go unarmed. Quite frankly, this woman was lucky to escape to the inside of her house. However, even if you don't want to carry a gun, pepper gel is a reasonable alternative. While it's not as effective as a firearm, especially against three assailants, it still gives you a fighting chance. In the immortal and wise words of former Army Colonel David Hackworth, stay alert and stay alive.
To that I can only say, amen. Our movie of the month is Being George, as in George Washington. Please go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog, and get the link. You can watch it for free. We'll review it at the end of the month, and I'd really appreciate it if you'd send me your comments about Being George. Our book giveaway this week is Mark Hassara's Tanker Pilot. To get in on the drawing, email me, Denny at frontlinesoffreedom.com, and put Tanker Pilot in the subject line. Next week on Front Lines of Freedom, U.S. Congressman Louie Gohmert will discuss trials for our combat soldiers. We'll also talk with a combat veteran who's running for Congress, Judd Matheny from Tennessee, and former SEAL Mark Lonergan Hertel will discuss his book, Sierra 2.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Front Lines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Join me next week for military and veteran information that you won't get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed. As the leading distributor of grocery products to U.S. commissaries around the world, Spartan Nash is proud to work with the Defense Commissary Agency to provide a taste of home to our commissary patrons around the world.
From canned beans to instant oatmeal, the Freedom's Choice brand has all your favorite food items made exclusively for our nation's armed forces and families with the quality, value, and integrity you deserve. Learn more at SpartanNash.com.
For those who have loved ones serving in the military, waiting is a way of life, whether it's by the phone or by the computer. And waiting is not fun, especially when the waiting is for the status of an unexpected injury. Fisher Houses give families of wounded warriors receiving care at military or VA medical centers a home away from home, so they can focus not on waiting, but on being together in a time of need. Learn more at fisherhouse.org.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News.
Today, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell announced that he has canceled 3 weeks of the chamber's month-long August recess. Earlier today, McConnell explains his actions.
We think we have a good chance of passing a number of appropriation bills. In order to do that and in order to deal with this nominations backlog, it's necessary for us to be here in August and to do our work.
President Trump is changing his tune regarding a NAFTA deal with Canada and Mexico. White House National Economic Council Director Larry Kudlow has the details.
You know, yesterday we met with the president a couple times, and he is very seriously contemplating kind of a shift in the NAFTA negotiations. His preference now, and he asked me to convey this, is to actually negotiate with Mexico and Canada separately. He prefers bilateral negotiations.
This is USA Radio News.
Okay, so the big question for any decision you're going to make, is this actually going to work? Well, if you've heard about MediShare, which is a brilliant way of sharing healthcare costs, you may have wondered that. Does it work? Well, so did Dr. Stuart Hoover, who initially joined to save a lot of money. The typical family saves about $500 a month. Stuart saved even more.
When we first joined MediShare, we were immediately going from a little over $1,600 a month down to $460 basically a month.
So that's wonderful, but then his wife needed emergency surgery and the bills added up to $160,000.
So we were seeing the bills coming in, and then the bills were being paid. Portions were being shared, and the end result of this is this bill was taken care of.
Yes, MediShare works, and it's so easy to get your questions answered too, so why not? You can call right now, 833-39-BIBLE. That's 833-39-BIBLE, 833-39-BIBLE.
President Trump will sign a Veterans Care bill in a Wednesday White House ceremony, and USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes has a preview.
The measures to give vets expanded access to private care at taxpayer expense, and proponents say while it will help relieve the backlog at VA health centers around the nation, critics are warning the measures